What's up, party people? This is Chris DeRose, and in this long holiday break, Josh and I have been going all over the place doing stuff. It's been really hard. We apologize. We haven't had much content. I do have some stuff coming out that I've been sitting on, and well, I'm going to bring you something right now that I just got off the phone here with Tommy Economics. It was a weird exchange. He has this Ethereum video. He's been on YouTube for like a month. Somebody tipped me off on this guy. So I was like, okay, let's go explore. Sure enough, he made the comment that I guess Ethereum, he kind of screwed it up. You can look through this if you want. But the gist was that Ethereum is not a Ponzi, because a Ponzi is when older investors are paid off by the deposits of newer investors. He actually mangled that quote. He got him backwards, but that's what he meant. And then it was kind of funny. So I put it up there, up on Twitter. And I announced that this is, in fact, the quote of the year. Now, I know that the barrier is very low at January 2nd, but hey, it's the best Ethereum quote of the year, if you ask me. So what ended up being a back-and-forth exchange turned into what was supposed to be a YouTube hangout, but then Tommy just didn't want to do that, which is fine. He asked me for my phone number, which I normally don't give out, but I said, you know what, fuck it, let's just do it. Frankly, I was going to try and help the guy, do him a favor. Sure enough, he calls me with caller ID blocking, so like after him telling me, they're like, what's wrong with sharing your number, bro? There was something wrong with sharing my number, but that's all right. It doesn't fucking matter. I mostly just don't want the fucking hecklers calling me, which, yeah, I do that to other people, so I probably deserve it. But anyways, what follows is that call. He's an Ethereum believer in the early stages of Ethereum here in at least the waning of Ethereum's prior bubble, which would, I think, be its last. We shall see. I think this is probably fun to document. He asked me to record this. Certainly, I like to do that, and I'm going to share that with you. So without further ado, let's hear from an advertiser, and let's get right to it.
Hey, Bitcoin is on Telegram. Are you looking for some quick and easy gamble in your lives? Come on over and check out Bitcoin Blink, the new Telegram gambling bot. We got raffle-style games from 4 tickets up to 64 tickets, with grand prizes up to 2 Bitcoins each game. Join the Bitcoin Gambling Den at telegram.me/BitcoinBlink. That's telegram.me/BitcoinBlink. Forget about it.
I don't really want to have a lengthy conversation. I want to have good vibes and enjoy life, right? And so I think we're all kind of in the same realm here with cryptocurrency. Like, we should enjoy life and be happy, you know? Just so much aggressiveness and people fighting and stuff. It drives me nuts.
Well, Tommy, blockchains are for Ponzi's. That is what they are for. So you can be nice, and like Dogecoin is a wonderful example of that. And guess what happened? Everybody lost all their money.
I was actually against Dogecoin when I first found it, right? And then I actually looked into it. The community being nice is a huge part of Dogecoin, but if you actually look at the amount of transaction volume and the user base of Dogecoin, it's enormous. It was. It's fading away now. But for 2014 and 15, it was the biggest competitor to Bitcoin by far. It was twice as big as Litecoin, if not bigger. Market cap was way lower.
No non-speculative use case. So all that you found out was that the volume of that Ponzi was greater than the other competing offers.
A lot of venture capital type investments, you know, like very early investments, are speculative. When Facebook had 100,000 users, people didn't buy it because of the ad revenue you can get from 100,000 users. They bought it because they foresaw that it could become 100 million users, which it did, and more. So that's the same kind of use cases we have here. These are not super they aren't super useful. Bitcoin's not even that useful today, honestly. Like, in the big scope of things, I have to explain to people all the time what it is. They still don't even know. But it has some use.
Bitcoin's very useful. I use Bitcoin all the time. I just use Bitcoin. I paid for some cocaine on New Year's, and my dealer takes Bitcoin. So, like, he only takes Bitcoin even. He doesn't want to take dollars.
You have to use Bitcoin for that.
No, you do.
The federal government
requires it. In fact, that's the only way to buy drugs online.
Well, you can obviously buy drugs for cash anywhere, you know? So I'm not really into that, but obviously I know plenty of people do that. So you don't need to have Bitcoin to do that.
It's very hard. If you want, right now, what city are you in?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
If you wanted cocaine in Phoenix, Arizona, how would you go about getting it right now?
I would probably contact, hypothetically, I don't obviously do this. You would contact someone who you know, like maybe someone in college, and they probably have some connections, maybe a druggie, right? And then they'll have a connection. That's obviously the easiest way for someone to buy a drug.
Is that the easiest way, or is the easiest way to go on Alpha Bay and have it shipped to your door?
Actually, I would say a lot of people are timid from using Alphabay and whatnot because of the internet and traceability. Just like, you know, Trump said the other day, he never sends anything over the internet. He does it by courier, by physical mail, because things can be traced. And a lot of people aren't technical users, Chris. Most people who are buying drugs are not super techie. They don't know how to protect their IP address and cover all their tracks. In fact, it's intimidating enough for most people in the tech world to make sure they're doing that right. A non-technical user is terrified of that.
Well, you say that, but I see that happen all the time. I mean, I talk to these people. They come on our show.
I never see it happen. I've never seen, in my life, I never have talked to a single person who's bought drugs via Bitcoin, to be honest.
Well,
I would actually be like, wow, that's amazing. That would explain a lot. I know a lot of people, Chris. I know a lot of people party.
But you told me at the start of this call that you don't know people that are using Bitcoin for much. And here is the entirety of the utility, not the entirety, but a big part of the utility currently. And now you're looking at Ethereum wondering why the utility matters. And you're obviously not seeing it in Bitcoin, so you don't know why Bitcoin was a success. And now you're applying that same logic to Ethereum. You're going to get to a stupid place. Because the market exists.
Actually, I saw some of your stuff on YouTube and whatnot, Chris, long time, years ago, and I was actually a fan of Counterparty and whatnot, and because if you watch my video, you'll know that what I've been looking for and waiting for in the cryptocurrency space is options. That's my thing. I'm an investor. I know a lot about the financial market and economics. That's my realm. So I was actually interested in Bitcoin in 2012. I put it on my list of most potent investments. You know, it was $10, and I put it on my list. I was like, I'll consider it. It went up to 200, and it crashed. And I was like, I'll buy it at 50. I think it might have touched 50 very briefly, but I basically missed that. And next thing I know, it goes to 1,000. So this was, of course, November 2013. And I said, I'll never take my eyes off Bitcoin and cryptocurrency again, and so I never have. But the realm I come from is from a financial perspective. So we're talking about things like speculation and these things. These are valuable to me. They're huge. I love the venture capital world. I love 100x gains that you can make in these kinds of investments.
These are just get rich quick schemes. Don't get me wrong. You're just looking at rich quick schemes.
Is Facebook, Snapchat, are these get rich quick? Because if so, then yes. But they're not.
Well, but you're not investing in those. You're gambling on very long odds to get rich quick.
What you may not see is that those investments are closed off to the vast majority of people. You couldn't invest in Snapchat or Facebook or anything early on.
Right.
But cryptocurrency is going to change that. See, it's hard right now.
You can't do that. It's very obvious you can't do it. I'll tell you why. Because what are you proposing?
You think
that like the SEC, let's say this grows. As this grows, it becomes a 10%, 20%, 100% of the size of the current VC economy. You think that the SEC isn't going to enforce at some level the same requirements that it applies to VCs?
What about Uber and Lyft? Do you think all the cab companies and all the states just gave them permission? No, they just came in and did it. It'll be the same thing. They're not going to ask for permission. It's just going to happen. And it's not just the U.S. It's every country in the world.
Uber is a regulatory arbitrage play, and sometimes they're successful when they work well considered. But these are harder to enforce. I'm sorry, these are easier
Uber
to enforce than Uber is. Also, they have
regulated. Yeah, Uber is regulated and powerful now. They're over $50 billion valuation now. They're one of the strongest companies out there. So now they have an army of lawyers that can have them shape the world that fits their needs, which is fine because it's a good value to the world. Cryptocurrency, like programmable cryptocurrency, will do that with finance. We'll be able to raise money for projects on a way smaller scale and way more accessible toward everyone that won't go through regulation. It'll just happen. And then eventually it'll become big enough that we kind of realize we can't do anything about it. The same thing about countries controlling currencies. Every country has a monopoly on their currency. They would never allow a competitor. Bitcoin wouldn't be allowed to live if they could shut it down. But they can't shut it down. So that's why Bitcoin exists, and it will continue to grow.
And Bitcoin is a decentralized Ponzi, whereas these are centralized Ponzi. So they're very easy to enforce. You just walk in there. They all have their names on the door. You can just walk in there and enforce it. It's very different than Bitcoin.
This definition of Ponzi, so you're basically labeling anything that appreciates in value as a Ponzi scheme.
Anything
you buy for cheap that goes up in value is not a Ponzi scheme. It's just appreciation in value. Same thing with real estate, stocks, Tesla, Apple. If you bought any of those early on, you appreciate it because other people are willing to pay more than you. That's not a Ponzi scheme. That's appreciation.
Those assets have a baseline utility. So there's any number of ways to quantify that. You know, everything from like price to earnings ratios to, I don't know, CapEx rates. But in the case of cryptocurrency,
Bitcoin, right?
The utility is zero for the majority of them, for the vast majority. So now you have like a div by zero kind of equation here, which makes it a Ponzi.
Okay. So I know you're a fan of Bitcoin, clearly, hopefully, right?
I have to be. I need it. The government requires that I use it.
So is Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme?
It has a baseline degree of utility. So we can talk about the degree to which it's a Ponzi, which would be the speculative component, but it has a denominator of utility, which makes it probably not too much of a Ponzi, or at the very least, it's a decentralized Ponzi.
How about in the first 2 years? Was Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme?
Absolutely was until you had the federal government come in and start requiring we use it for online purchases.
So then our definition of Ponzi scheme just differs, because when I think of a Ponzi scheme, I worked for a company in the past that had this quote-unquote real estate company that you'd give them money and they were giving good returns of 15-20% a year. Well, it turns out they weren't actually investing in real estate. They were just taking the investors' money, you know, the earlier people, paying them out 15-20% on the new people who came in.
Yeah.
That's my perception of a Ponzi. That's the same thing Bernie Madoff did. That's how I see a Ponzi. This is different because there's no group. There's no central group here that's taking people's money and handing out to other people. It's just appreciating in value like any other commodity.
Your
Bitcoin is redistributing.
First off, well, this Ethereum, but your definition was posted
as Bitcoin's Ponzi too. So let's
Ponzi. Not natural Ponzi's happen. Like tulips, for example, is a very classic case of the natural Ponzi. And that I think is fairly well articulated. We can get into that.
They weren't a Ponzi scheme. They were a bubble. A Ponzi scheme is suggesting someone is redistributing wealth
based on
new investors' money.
Correct.
New investors are
paid for by the old investors as deposits. That is a Ponzi.
Right. And there's some group doing that. There's no group in the tulip bubble. It was just a bubble.
A natural Ponzi.
It was a bubble like a real estate bubble.
A natural Ponzi is when that occurs without the center of control. Now, in the case of Ethereum, it's just very centralized. Vitalik will sell you his ether that he created with impunity, basically. But
I haven't heard the word natural Ponzi before. I know it's not common out there. So
I know you haven't heard it before, but if you do some basic research on finance.
The word is not common. No, I mean, like, I have not heard it in my day-to-day communication ever in my life. So, and I communicate a whole lot about finance and economics. Just to make a point there, though, the fact is you're using the word Ponzi. The word Ponzi associates with my description of what it is, like the real estate company I gave. So when you come in and you say Ethereum's a Ponzi scheme, most people are thinking that it's the same kind of thing where there's a central body taking old investor or new investor money and giving it to old investors. That's not occurring. So it's a little confusing for people, if not, I don't know, deceptive, though you may not trying to be deceptive about it, but it is,
this is the world,
confusing.
This is the World Bank's distinction. They did really actually did a phenomenal piece on this, and this word has come around. They didn't invent it. It's been around for a good while. What is your career, though? Are you a financial advisor?
No, and none of this is investment advice either. So, you know, do what you will for anyone.
What is your career exactly, though? You said something in finance.
I was working as a mortgage banker, and then I done well in my investments. So I am moving into the investment world.
When did your investments – okay, that's not going to go well for you. When did your investments do well after the bubble, I take it?
Just over time with
– When did you start investing in real estate?
In real estate?
Well, yeah. I
guess this is kind of off subject, right? Like, why are we talking about this?
But your financial specialization is low is what it's obvious. So I want to figure out where you came from.
It's just honestly out of passion. In 2011, I decided what I wanted to be really good at, and I narrowed it down to being extremely good at investing in finance and whatnot. So I've self-educated myself quite a bit on it. I don't really see – I'd love to have people to communicate with on large-scale topics of economics and finance, but honestly, it's pretty rare. Like, let's talk about things of, like, how much money is in the world, how much of that is credit – the world's credit bubble expanding and contracting. These are topics that very few people know about or talk about, right? Even my friends who are extremely into finance, you know, like the Harvard MBA type friends, they don't explore these topics very much. So
Well, those are macroeconomic discussions, I guess, but they're deep markets. They're well discussed. It's just that I think a lot of people as an armchair level never cared about it until Bitcoin. And then you saw Bitcoin and you decided you could probably, you know,
I know, I'm aware of that.
Yeah. So, okay. You should consider that. So it's not a shallow market by any stretch.
I came into Bitcoin again because I saw it as one of the most potent investments in the world. I keep it with.
Well, you came here to get rich quick, and now you're trying to do it again on Ethereum. But Ethereum is designed to prey on you
quick.
Exactly. You are exactly the person it is designed to target as a scam. You want to talk about the merits of Ethereum?
Let's just keep the focus on programmable cryptocurrency first, I would say. The merit there, I don't know. Again, you may not see that, but I see a decentralized stock exchange. I don't think you understand the control government has on money and how it regulates finances, stocks, everything like that. But that is something that will change in the future. By no doing of mine, it's happening on its own.
So you're not a programmer in any capacity, but you are here to invest in this and evaluate this technology as a programmer would. And that should trouble you.
I'm not a programmer, but I can. Okay, well, I'm coming from, a financial perspective. So you're coming from a programmer perspective. I'm coming from, a large-scale economics perspective.
But I don't think you're doing that either. But nonetheless, let's talk about the value.
Sorry that you feel that way.
Well, let's talk about the value proposition of storing code on a blockchain. Because that is a big part of what Ethereum came here saying. Well, we want or need Ethereum, or we want or need smart contracts on a blockchain. And I think, first and foremost, the security concerns are non-trivial. We looked at, the DAO. That has to happen over and over again because you don't have the ability to iterate your design and address security vulnerabilities. So when you see, Windows updating your computer, and I'm sure you run Windows, what do you think of when you think of smart contracts that no longer have that ability? Have you considered that is the value proposition in part of Ethereum, is that you can't update your code?
You can create new code.
Correct. Okay, perfect. That's fine. Great. Just like the DAO did. Now, the next thing you have to consider is what is the side effect, the opportunity cost of publishing your code on a blockchain where everybody can view it? So unlike existing incumbent systems, I can hold information asynchronous to the market. I can keep to myself the things that I will do in response to the market. But the value proposition of Ethereum is that, no, you would remove that competitive advantage and you would instead provide that ability to all of your competitors to see how you might hedge a position or some such thing. You remove that ability.
I see that as a great thing for humanity, Chris. I mean, if we have, that sounds to me like a fast evolving world that benefits people a lot. And would people still create things of value? I think so. You know, people do things for free all the time as it is. That sounds like an enormous value.
So Tommy, in your exploration of finance, in your specialization, as you've taught yourself, you have not figured out that asymmetry of information is the only way to profit in a market.
Bitcoin's code is public, right? So anyone could clone Bitcoin, and lo and behold, there's thousands of clones of Bitcoin, yet Bitcoin retains its value. I think we'll find that organizations are not successful just because of the code they have in them, but because of how they function, the leaders behind it, those kinds of things are also extremely important.
Okay, those are unrelated ideas. Okay, we can talk about Bitcoin.
No, they're completely related.
But Bitcoin's not a for-profit company or a for-efficiency company.
You're saying because a code can be copied, there would be no value in creating code.
No,
someone could copy it. That's what you said.
It's the proprietary information when engaged in a market. So because you are holding in secret knowledge that hasn't been reflected in the price, you are able to profit in any kind of code scenario. Now with Ethereum, my presumption is that in the financial market, in a DEX, the example you provided, that the vast majority of code would be code that works through the marketplace and the pricing information there. So if you're publishing
first of all,
you have no advantages anymore. It's the same thing as if...
First of all, there may be ways to obfuscate your code in the future
that
perhaps don't exist today.
And I know that, again, you don't have the computer science knowledge to know that, but you cannot both show the network your information and hide it from them. You can maybe provide a decryption key at the time of execution, but then again, what value is there now? Because you could have just centralized that code and done the exact same thing with no loss of efficiency. In fact, it'd be significantly more efficient.
I know you're trying to get deep into the computer science aspect of it.
This isn't deep. This is basic 101 stuff.
Okay. Well, I don't think many people look at whether you can obfuscate code. I would actually argue that you can. If anything, Chris, you could certainly point to a private server where you have information that no one else can see. That's like a worst case scenario.
But that's what we do now, Tommy.
But a lot of the data can still remain on the blockchain. So I think it would be a stepping stone in that direction.
To what end,
it's just
though,
an idea. I honestly haven't explored it too much.
If we iterate to what we have now, Tommy, then why do we need this? Because what we have now is always going to be more efficient than syndicating all of the information to everybody on the world all at the same time. Has to be.
Okay. The point I want to make here is you're undervaluing the value of programmable cryptocurrency, and that's the key. So maybe people can copy it in the future. We'll let someone make it in the first place and have a period of time where they can profit, like a decentralized stock exchange.
You
that is enormous.
Declare that,
and that
Tommy,
cannot exist.
Make a case for it. I want to explore that with you. I can just as easily declare that you're undervaluing the case for centralization. But that's not a sophisticated view. You want to build a case
predicated on logic. So let's say you want to be a company straight on the stock exchange, right? Chris, do you know what you have to do in order to do that?
I didn't quite hear that. Say that again. On the what exchange?
Let's say you have a company
stock
and
exchange.
You want it to be publicly traded. Yeah. What do you have to do to do that? Do you know?
Oh, God. There's a bajillion forms. You need to work with, you know, JP Morgan or one of these companies to do a ton of auditing. I mean,
How much do you think you have to do that? Just
in terms of dollars in the bank, or in terms of consulting fee payments, or in terms of
company profit, company size?
Oh God, I don't know. I would imagine, you know, it's in the millions even, but I have no idea. You could do like the reverse pink slip thing, right, for less. So there's some options there, but yeah, the point is that you do need a substantial amount of money to be traded. And by the way, do you know why that's an efficiency? Because if we don't have that kind of money, any huckster can come in there and announce anything he wants, and it will turn into a Ponzi scheme.
But you see that as an inefficiency. I welcome opportunities to catch companies that are ripe and new. Perhaps someone creates the next Snapchat, and instead of going to Silicon Valley and venture capital there, maybe they're like, you know what? I am going to allow anyone who wants to invest in this to do so. I need the capital.
Well,
and that will happen.
You do, but what is the success rate? What is the success rate of what you're advocating? Because I'm pretty sure it's under 1%.
Sure. I'm sure it's low. It's the same thing with cryptocurrency. How many cryptocurrencies are there out there? There are thousands.
Why
is it
incumbent
on me
to explain to you why this is stupid? Because if 99% of these projects fail, all you're doing is creating systemic risk that society has to pay for the gamblers who are happy to put their money into losing ventures.
So you're arguing that basically venture capital is a waste of people's time and money. Well, I think that's for people's own individuals.
Well, all of the numbers show that.
On their own. All
the data is in right now, and the VCs aren't making money. They're doing terribly. And the reason why it's not a big deal is because they're all fairly wealthy individuals who've been qualified, so the society can bear their losses. But what you're advocating is you would expand the size of that very speculative market to include people that are 16 years old and have $100 in the bank.
Yeah, venture capital is it's pretty much largely private money, Chris. It's not public money. So the public's not bearing the burden of it. It's private money who is funding it and at large.
They absolutely are. So one of the reasons, you may not know this, but one of the reasons why gambling was illegal in the United States was because we had a lot of mostly degenerates. They were in these like towns in the Western front. Gamblers would come in. Shrewd gamblers would come in. They play at the poker tables or play various forms of gaming. They would fleece the town of its money. The degenerate gamblers would then go home to their wives, probably beat them and go to bed, but at the same time, they had no food to eat now. So this town started making gambling illegal because what they realized is that the more shrewd amongst them were sapping the town's resources and taking from the towns, robbing them by way of their own ignorance and the innate human desire to get rich quick. So, I mean, we have a replay of that now. Now, you're not aware of that history. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily the perfect configuration that we have now, but you're completely unaware of it. And history, as it's repeating itself, is demonstrating this to be, in fact, the case. You can't name a single cryptocurrency that hasn't had the same exact pattern every other one has besides Bitcoin, which is a major pump followed by like a doldrum where it stays and eventually dissipates into zero.
So you don't – let's just take a step back, look at the big picture. So you don't see value in programmable cryptocurrency, correct? Seems like that.
Nobody does. You can't name a single case that isn't non-speculative or isn't – yeah, non-speculative.
Okay. Well, just like I said, my interest in investing – in cryptocurrency and different cryptocurrency projects is something that I greatly value. You may not value it, Chris,
but
I'm not alone here. A lot of people do.
Of course you do, because everybody likes to gamble. And the case you've articulated is that you're here to get rich quick.
But you have no determination
of how to evaluate either the financial side of things or the programmatic side of things.
Okay.
And I'm asking very simple
questions.
Well,
you're wrong about that. And that,
But no, you've made your case. Like this right here can be replayed for anybody.
Solid. Let's clarify for everyone. So 3 years down the road, we can look at this. Chris DeRose does not believe programmable cryptocurrency. We'll see who's right. We'll see, bro. I'm 100% sure programmable cryptocurrency is the future.
I want to clarify.
I'm so sorry you don't see that.
I want to clarify that it is Turing complete that nobody wants. Non-Turing complete is awesome. We all need that. And multi-sig is a perfect example of that. There's others. Atomic swaps, probably. A few other things. But just want to make sure if that is going down on a record that is where the distinction
is. Let's just agree to disagree, Chris. Do you think programmable cryptocurrency has no value? I think it has a ton of value. That's the issue. So that's it.
Let me ask you a very simple question. What can I do with Ethereum that I can't do with multisig?
You have multisig. So how many transactions do you say you can do with counterparty 2 or 3 you say you're doing, right? So you can technically do infinite amount of transactions in a counterparty transaction, is that correct, Chris?
I don't think you're making sense right now. I don't know that I said anything
about
that.
Each counterparty transaction is a Bitcoin transaction, right? So it's 15 cents per counterparty transaction, correct or not?
Yes, that's about right.
So you're saying with multi-sig, so how many transactions are we going to tie together? 10? So it's $1.50 per transaction. What about 100? $15 a transaction? That's at today's Bitcoin fees. What about when Bitcoin fees hit 50 cents? Do you see the limitations on that?
Okay, so you're going to make a throughput case, but that wasn't – and we can talk about throughput, and I'm happy to, but my point is at the level of programmatic ability, where can I find an efficiency in Turing completeness?
It's not programmable. These are severe –
No,
limits, Chris.
You don't know how multisig works, and that's obvious. And nobody does in Ethereum, which is also very obvious. I can create a 2 or 3 multisig. We have 2 parties deposit. We can then have a binary outcome that is broadcast by an oracle. This is all in Bitcoin. And we can additionally issue bonds for end lock time transactions to refund the money in case the oracle doesn't broadcast their bet. So you have the ability there to execute a fairly sufficient degree of control where the code is executed by an oracle on any server, any platform, Apache, through some kind of web thing maybe, or whatever you want. See, I don't know. And the settled value is entered onto the network that way, which is the same thing that Ethereum does, but you get to keep the code secret. You don't have the risk of oracle bribing, or at least not to the same degree you have with Ethereum. And the throughput's going to be higher by a lot.
How much would it cost to do a counterparty transaction? Say a complex one, Chris.
So first off, this is Bitcoin, not counterparty. Okay, I just want to make sure. I can tell you the cost of these in counterparty.
Relevant. It's relevant because, like I told you at the beginning of the conversation, I was a fan of counterparty years ago. But it's, like I said in my video, it's like building a skyscraper on shifting sands. Bitcoin speeds go up. Do those not affect counterparty, Chris? Just yes or no?
I don't. Again, you're having like a weird schism. Hold on. I'm still trying to understand. Everything I just described has nothing to do with counterparty.
Bitcoin
so, like, I don't know why counterparty is relevant. Yeah.
Because counterparty was the best expression of a type of programmable cryptocurrency.
Counterparty was never programmable. It only ever had something in testnet. There was never anything in mainnet. And they removed that feature, which, frankly, I think is probably good. It's very controversial. So you demonstrate zero knowledge
of
incumbent
systems. You work in counterparty, Chris, so I don't work in there, but I do, and so I don't spend all my time in there, but I definitely did delve into it, and I saw how you guys do it. Maybe you're not doing it this way anymore, but when I was looking at, you guys were using the 40 bytes of data to essentially label something, much like a serial code, right?
No. I'm happy to talk about counterparty, but you have it so completely wrong, and it's also like not part of this discussion anyways, because everything about Bitcoin
the whole reason,
vanilla.
The reason why it's relevant is because the reason I was interested in counterparty was because counterparty had a decentralized exchange, except
it
never
went
anywhere.
That it does have.
Right.
Well, because
so
nobody,
let's just keep,
nobody
let's
needs
keep the
that.
Conversation simple.
Nobody needs that, Tommy, because these are registered assets, not bearer assets. And in fact, the ones that have gone places are things like Rare Pepe, which are actually non-centralized.
Well, it's your opinion that nobody needs that. The future will tell. So we'll see.
Well, can we talk logic?
So
like, can we walk you through it? Because there's an easy reason.
I don't think
there's an easy reason why that's the case. You want me to tell you why that's the case?
You have expressed why you think that's the case. I've expressed why I think it's the case that programmable future has an enormous future. So
no,
time
you
will
didn't.
Tell.
All you said was that that you're here to get rich quick. You have yet to find a single utilitarian case.
No, I never
case.
Said that. You said that about me like 10 times.
Because you articulate it in ways that are like obtuse, so I have to like distill it, but that's is what you're saying. You have yet to illustrate a single utilitarian need for Ethereum.
As I mentioned, a decentralized exchange. Like, you see the freedom that Bitcoin brings to money, it'll be magnitudes higher than that. It's just something you don't see yet. You think Bitcoin can accomplish everything in the financial world?
But you don't
I'm telling
see
you
that,
that it won't.
Either.
And you
you're
can
just,
feel free to disagree.
You're just iterating we'll wishes. Like you just throw out wishes, but there's no reasoning there.
No.
You have to find an inefficiency in the market. You haven't done that.
What about a decentralized Uber?
That's wonderful, maybe, but it's how much is it going to cost?
Maybe.
How much is it going to cost? How expensive will that be?
You're missing the point.
And how come Uber isn't already? I mean, what is it about Uber that's not decentralized currently?
Has to go through all the regulations. That costs a lot of money.
Okay, except that may just be the cheapest way to do it. What if decentralized Uber costs 100 times as much?
Why would it cost 100 times as much? It's just code running on a blockchain.
Well, first off, you have to pay for the execution on this very limited resource. Like, you want to talk about the throughput. Ethereum is no less constrained than Bitcoin, probably significantly more so considering all of the aspirations it has. And there's more. But so now you're going to propose that we do the entirety of the Uber system on this very bandwidth and in storage constrained blockchain. In addition to that, every single transaction is going to need gas of some kind. So, like, every time you ping your driver, rather than do like a free ping of your driver, it costs you money. And then on top of all of that, you've got things like Sybil attack prevention. You've got to have like people that manage the drivers for various form of reputational service. I don't know how you do like the offices that would do that or something, or individuals.
The future you don't see is not going to. It's going to be a lot more bare bones than you think. It'll have a review system in there, so people have reviews. Some kind of algorithm that weeds out bad actors from good actors. We're talking like 10 years ahead, Chris, though. So, you know.
But this is wishful thinking.
You may not.
I could just as easily announce that time travel.
This is coming.
But I can tell you that time travel is coming, right? And it has exactly as much reasoning behind it. And that's stupid.
Sure. If you can lay out the how time travel is going to happen bit by bit, then I'm listening.
But you can't do that with Uber on the blockchain. You're just throwing out what you're seeing in press releases.
You can put in. You can put your location in on the blockchain. You can put reviews there. If there's timestamps, what more do you need? What am I missing here?
Well, how much?
Right?
How much does that cost? Like to do? Because it sounds like every one of those things takes a little bit of
coding,
money.
Just the coding to do. In terms of transaction costs, you may not see this or be aware of this, but it's not just going to be Ethereum. I'm not a maximalist of any
cryptocurrency. Why don't I go on there right now, and why don't I create a profile for myself and give myself a whole bunch of good reviews, and as a driver, you go ahead and pay me, and I suck your money up. Like, basic Sybil attack prevention. Who's going to do that?
Yeah, there'll be algorithms that can evolve.
But you just announced
that
again. You don't know. You have no specialization there. You don't even know what a Sybil attack is my suspicion. What's a Sybil attack?
So here we're arguing semantics again. I've heard the word plenty. No, I haven't.
But you don't know what
it is. Value on it.
And you know, here you are investing. And
hey,
the arrogance.
Time out. If you're going to be disrespectful, then I don't want to have this conversation. And you have been numerous times, and I've been tolerant. But that's it. Like, I'm putting my foot down. If you can't be respectful, I don't want to have a conversation, period. I don't know why you treat people like that either, Chris. Why do you do that? I've noticed
that
on your show.
I don't know
treat
what it
people,
is to be respectful or not, but you are
and you,
you
me,
are furthering
and you
Ponzi
me
schemes.
Here.
How nice am I supposed to be to a Ponzi pumper?
Okay.
Is
not
it critical thinking?
Oh,
is it critical thinking that it's offensive?
For the listeners, Chris has declared Bitcoin was a Ponzi scheme for its first 2 years, so we've cleared that up. So I think
I've said that many times.
I think
it's very obvious. It had to have been, because there's no non-speculative inflow until Silk Road.
I think we can leave it there. I think we can leave it there, Chris.
All right.
Bitcoin was a Ponzi scheme.
I will.
Good to go.
I will leave it there. Hey, Tommy, where can people find out more about you?
Find me at Tommy Economics on YouTube and Twitter. And
Well, thank you.
Wish you guys the best. Explore cryptocurrency. Don't just think one cryptocurrency is the true and only one. It's not going to be that way. The world, it's changing quickly. So we'll see. We'll see in 5 years.
All right. Thanks for being on Bitcoin Uncensored.
All right.
Are you fed up with strangers assuming you're tender? Sick and tired of wearing boring old t-shirts that you purchased using antiquated payment systems like fiat money or credit cards? Not anymore. Your prayers to the lords of consumerism and Satoshi Nakamoto have finally been answered. The future is here. Head on over to CryptoVerge.com, where you can purchase original Bitcoin and cryptocurrency-themed t-shirts. Not impressed yet? What if I told you you could pay using Bitcoin, Monero, or Litecoin? Still not impressed? What if I told you we also accept most major scam coins, such as Ethereum, Dash, Zcash, and more?
Oh my God.
You're not dreaming, friends. The future is here, and it's cryptotastic. That's CryptoVerge.com, where you can turn nerd money into new clothes.
All right, so that was that. I don't know. Fun content, maybe. Sometimes I like to record these things for posterity. Not even necessarily to brand Tommy Economics with those quotes so much as I think that, I don't know, we can look back at these things like a year or two. We can kind of point to them when the next guy shows up and he's telling us, this time is different. My Nigerian prince is real. We can say, well, maybe, but the track record's not so good. In any case, I hope you liked this episode. Let us know in the comments what you think. We're going to be back on track here shortly. I've got all kinds of stuff coming up. I've got the Chezaluna video coming out. I have a new BU coming out soon. Any day now, we're going to be recording this. It should be fun. I've got so much great stuff to talk about. And from there, we've got the NABC coming up right around the corner. So that's going to be a wonderful time. I've been partying with Bitcoin Airlog down here. The last few days, I know we got a few other people. I think Talon's coming in town. I know we've got really the entire Bitcoin crew. So if you are thinking about coming to Miami, you better hurry it up. We've got very little days left before you can register for the NABC. But we've got the Miami Bitcoin Hackathon, which is totally open, totally free. And it's got like a crazy reward. I think it's like 15 Bitcoin reward for this year's first prize winner with some great stuff for the other prizes. So maybe I'll see you down for that. And until then, peace out, party people. You can reach out to me on Twitter at DeRoseTech or at Brighton36 in Telegram. Message me and I'll get you into the dojo. Have some fun there. Peace out, party people. Something, say Catherine. Something, something. Peace out.